Chapter 18. A Narrow Passage. A number of people looked around at Moiraine when she came out into the common room, some with sympathy in their eyes. Doubtless they were imagining what it must be like to be the focus of attention for three Aes Sedai, and they could not imagine any good in it. There was no commiseration on any sister's face. Most took hardly any notice of her at all. Phelana wore a pleased smile, though, probably thinking the Lady Alice's name as good as written in the novice book. At least she did not know the truth, not with that smile. There was some hope of staying hidden from Ciarán a while longer. Cadswain was nowhere in sight, nor the other two. Picking her way through the tables, Moiraine felt as though she had been spun like a top. There were too many questions, and not an answer to be found. She wished Swan were there, with her ability to solve puzzles. And nothing shook Swan. She could have used Swan's presence for the steadying alone. A young woman looked in at the door from the street, then jerked out of sight. Moiraine missed a step. "Wish for something hard enough, and you could think you saw it." The woman peeked in again, the hood of her cloak fallen atop the bundle on her back. And it really was Swan, sturdy and handsome in one of Tamora's plain blue riding dresses. This time she saw Moiraine, but instead of rushing to greet her, Swan nodded up the street and vanished again. Heart climbing into her throat, Moiraine swept her cloak around her and went out. Down the street, Swan was slipping through the traffic, glancing back at every third step. A wagon driver hauled her reins hard to avoid running Swan down and cracked her whip over Swan's head, but Swan seemed unaware of the horses snorting in their traces, or the whip, or the wagon driver's angry shouts. Moiraine followed quickly, worry growing. Another 3 or 4 years would pass before Swan gained enough strength to tell Satalia she was leaving the job as Satalia's assistant. There would be snow at Sunday before the woman let her go short of that. And the only other possibility for her being in Canluam... Moiraine groaned, and a big-eared fellow selling pins from a tray gave her a concerned look. She glared so hard that he started back. Perhaps Swan had let something slip. Or maybe her book of names had been found, or... No. How it happened did not matter. Ciarán must have found out about everything. It would be just like the woman to send Swan to bring her back, so their worry could feed on each other during the long ride. Maybe she was building phantasms, but she could not imagine another explanation. 100 paces from the inn, Swan looked back once more, paused till she was sure that Moiraine saw her, then darted into an alley. Moiraine quickened her stride and followed. Her friend was pacing beneath the still unlit oil lamps that lined this narrow, dusty passage. The dark blue dress showed signs of hard travel, creases and stains, dust. Nothing frightened Swan, yet fear glittered in those sharp blue eyes now. Moiraine opened her mouth to confirm her own fears about Ciarán, but the taller woman spoke first.
"Light! I thought I'd never bloody find you! Tell me you found him, Moiraine. Tell me the Najima boy's the one, and we can hand him to the tower with 100 sisters watching, and it's done!"
100 sisters? "No, Swan, he is not." This did not sound like Ciarán. "What is the matter? Why did you come yourself instead of sending a message?" Swan began to weep. Swan, who had a lion's heart. Tears spilled down her cheeks. Throwing her arms around Moiraine, she squeezed hard enough to make Moiraine's ribs ache. She was trembling.
"I couldn't trust this to a pigeon," she mumbled. "Or to any of the eyes and ears. I wouldn't have dared. They're all dead. Aisha and Corrine... Valera and Lutis and Malin. They say Aisha and her warder were killed by bandits in Murundi. Corrine supposedly fell off a ship in the Alguenya during a storm and drowned. And Malin. Malin!"
Sobs racked her so she could not go on. Moiraine hugged her back, making soothing sounds, and staring past Swan's shoulder in consternation. Accidents do happen, she said slowly. Bandits, storms. Aes Sedai can die as easily as anyone else.
She was having a hard time making herself believe. All of them? Her father used to say that once was happenstance, twice might be coincidence, but thrice or more indicated the actions of your enemies. He said he had read it somewhere. But what enemies? A thought occurred, and she forced it down. Some things did not bear thinking. Swan pushed herself away from Moiraine's embrace.
You don't understand.
Malin!
Grimacing, she scrubbed at her eyes.
Fishguts! I'm not making this clear. Get hold of yourself, you bloody fool!
That last was growled to herself. Guiding Moiraine to an upended cask with no bung, she set Moiraine down and shrugged off the bundle from her own back. If that was all she was traveling with, likely she did not have so much as a spare dress.
You won't want to be standing when you hear what I have to say. For that matter, I bloody well don't want to be standing myself.
Dragging a crate with broken slats from further up the alley, she settled on it, fussing with her skirts, peering toward the street, muttering about people looking in as they passed. Her reluctance did nothing to soothe Moiraine's fluttering stomach. It seemed to do little for Swan's, either. When she started again, she kept pausing to swallow, like a woman who wanted to sick up.
Malin returned to the tower almost a month ago. I don't know why. She didn't say where she had been, or where she was going, but she only meant to stay a few nights. I'd heard about Corrine the morning Malin came back, and the others before that. So I decided to speak to her. Don't look at me that way. I know how to be cautious.
Cautious? Swan? Moiraine could have laughed. Only she knew if she did, it might well tip over into tears of her own. This was madness. It had to be madness. She shoved that horrible thought away again. There had to be another explanation. There had to be.
Anyway, I sneaked into her rooms and hid under the bed, so the servants wouldn't see me when they turned down her sheets.
Swan grunted sourly.
I fell asleep under there. Sunrise woke me and her bed hadn't been slept in. So I sneaked out again, not easy that time of morning, but I'm sure nobody saw me, and went down to the second sitting of breakfast. And while I was spooning my porridge, Chesmal Emery came in to... She announced that Malin had been found in her bed, that she'd died during the night.
She finished in a rush and sagged, staring at Moiraine. Moiraine was very glad to be sitting. Her knees would not have supported a feather. It was madness. Murder had been done.
The Red Aja, she suggested finally.
A Red might kill a sister she thought intended to protect a man who could channel. It was possible. But she could not have said it aloud because she did not believe it.
Swan snorted. Malin didn't have a mark on her. Yellows delved her, of course. They'd have detected poison or smothering. They found nothing and called it a natural death, but I know it wasn't. It couldn't be, not the way they found her. No marks. That means the power, Moiraine. Could even a Red do that?
Her voice was fierce, but she pulled the bundle up, clutching it on her lap. She seemed to be hiding behind it. Still, there was less fear on her face than anger now.
Think, Moiraine. Tamra supposedly died in her sleep, too. Only we know Malin didn't, no matter where she was found. First Tamra, then the others started dying. The only thing that makes sense is that someone noticed her calling sisters in and wanted to know why badly enough that they bloody risked putting the Ammerlin seat herself to the question. They had to have something to hide to do that. Something they'd hazard anything to keep hidden. They killed her to hide it. To hide what they'd done. And then they set out to kill the rest. Which means they don't want the boy found, not alive. They don't want the dragon reborn at the last battle. Any other way to look at it is tossing the slop bucket into the wind and hoping for the best.
Unconsciously, Moiraine peered toward the mouth of the alley. A few people walking by glanced in, but none more than once.
No one paused at seeing them seated there. Some things were easier to speak of when you were not too specific. The Armerlin had been put to the question. She had been killed. Not Tamra. Not a name that brought up the familiar face. Someone had murdered her. They did not want the Dragon Reborn found. Putting someone to the question with the power violated none of the three oaths, but murder using Sidar certainly did, even for those Moiraine did not want to name any more than Swan did. Forcing her face to smoothness, forcing her voice to calm, she forced the words out. The Black Aja. Swan flinched, then nodded, glowering. Almost any sister grew angry at the suggestion that a secret Aja existed, hidden inside the others, an Aja dedicated to the Dark One. Most sisters refused to listen to any mention of it. The White Tower had stood for the light for over 3,000 years, but some sisters did not deny the Black straight out. Some believed. Very few would admit it even to another sister, though. Moiraine did not want to admit it to herself. Swan plucked fretfully at the ties on her bundle, but she went on in a brisk voice. I don't think they have our names. Tamra never really thought us part of it. She told us to be quiet, put us aside, and forgot us. Else I'd have had an accident, too. Just before I left, I slipped a note with my suspicions under Sierran's door. Not about the boy, about the Black. Only I didn't know how much to trust her even there. The Armerlin's seat. But if it's real, then anybody could belong. Anybody. I wrote it with my left hand, but I was shaking so hard no one could recognize my writing if I'd used my right. Burn my liver. Even if we knew who to trust, we have bilge water for proof. Enough for me. Light. The Black Aja. If they know everything, all the women Tamra chose, there may be none left except us. We will have to move fast if we have a hope of finding the boy. It all seemed hopeless. Who could say how many Black sisters there might be? 20? 50? And a terrible thought. More? But Moiraine tried for a vigorous tone, too. It was gratifying that Swan only nodded. She would not give up for all her talk of shaking, and she never considered that Moiraine might. Most gratifying, especially when she still doubted her knees. Perhaps they know us, and perhaps not. Perhaps they think they can leave two new sisters for last. In any case, we cannot trust anyone but ourselves. The blood drained from her face, and she suddenly felt lightheaded. Oh, Light, I just had an encounter at the inn, Swan. She tried to recall every word, every nuance from the moment Marian first spoke. Swan listened with a distant look, filing and sorting. Catswain could be Black Aja, she agreed when Moiraine finished. She barely hesitated over the words. Maybe she's just trying to get you out of the way until she can dispose of you without rousing suspicion. Or she could be one of Tamra's chosen. Just because we think she hasn't been in Tar Valon for 2 years doesn't make it so. Sisters did slip in and out of the tower quietly sometimes, but Moiraine thought that anywhere Cadswain arrived shook as though struck by an earthquake. The trouble is, any of them could be either. Leaning across her bundle, she touched Moiraine's knee. Can you bring your horse from the stable without being seen? I have a good mount, but I don't know if she can carry both of us. We should be hours from here before they know we're gone. Moiraine smiled in spite of herself. She very much doubted the good mount. Any horse trader could pass off a broken-down cart horse as a charger to Swan, whose eye for horse flesh was no better than her seat in the saddle. The ride north must have been agony for her, and full of fear. No one knows you are here at all, Swan, she said. Best if it stays so. You have your book? Good. If I remain until morning, I will have a day's start on them instead of hours. You go on to Chachin now. Take some of my coin. By the state of Swan's dress, she had spent the last part of that trip sleeping under bushes.
she would not have dared draw much from the tower's bank before leaving.
Start searching for the Lady Inès, and I will catch you up there, looking for Avine Sahira on the way. It was not that easy, of course. Swan had a stubborn streak as wide as the Erin, and
I have enough for my needs, she grumbled.
But Moiraine insisted on handing her half the coins in her purse, and when Moiraine reminded her of their pledge during their first months in the tower, that what one owned belonged to the other as well, she muttered,
"We swore we'd find beautiful young princes to bond to and marry them besides. Girls say all sorts of silly things. You watch after yourself now. You leave me alone in this and I'll wring your neck."
Embracing to say goodbye, Moiraine found it hard to let go. An hour ago, her worries had been how long she could escape Ciaran's justice and the birch. Now that seemed like worrying over stubbing her toe. The Black Aja. She wanted to empty her stomach. If only she had Swan's courage. Watching Swan slip down the alley, adjusting that bundle on her back again, Moiraine wished she were green. She would have liked at least 3 or 4 warders to guard her back right then. Walking back up the street, she could not help looking at everyone she passed, man or woman. If the Black Aja, her stomach twisted every time she thought that name. If they were involved, then ordinary dark friends were too. No one denied that some misguided people believed the Dark One would give them immortality. People who would kill and do every sort of evil to gain that hoped-for reward. And if any sister could be Black Aja, anyone she met could be a dark friend. She hoped Swan remembered that. As she approached the gates of heaven, a sister appeared in the inn's doorway. Part of a sister, at least. All she could see was an arm with a fringed shawl over it, and that just for an instant. A very tall man who had just come out, his hair in 2 belled braids, turned back to speak for a moment, but a hand gestured peremptorily, and he strode past Moiraine wearing a scowl. She would not have thought twice of it if not for thinking about the Black Aja and dark friends. The light knew Aes Sedai did speak to men, and some did more than speak. She had been thinking of dark friends, though, and black sisters. If only she could have made out the color of that fringe. She hurried the last 30-odd paces, frowning. Marian and Lorella were seated together by themselves near the door, both still wearing their shawls. Few sisters did that except for ceremony, or for show. Both women were watching Cadswain go into that private sitting room, followed by a pair of lean, gray-haired men who looked hard as last year's oak. She still wore her shawl, too, with the white flame of Tarvalin bright on her back amid the woven vines. It could have been any of them. Cadswain might be looking for another warder. Greens always seemed to be looking. Marian or Lorella might be, too. Neither had one, unless bonded since she left Tarvalin. The fellow's scowl might have been for hearing he did not measure up. There were 100 possible explanations, and she put the man out of her head. The sure dangers were real enough without inventing more. Before she was 3 steps into the common room, Master Helvin bustled up in a green-striped apron, a bald-headed man nearly as wide as he was tall, and handed her a new irritation.
"Ah, Lady Alice, just who I was looking for. With 3 more Aes Sedai stopping here, I fear I need to shuffle the beds again. Certainly you won't mind sharing yours under the circumstances. Mistress Palin is a most pleasant woman."
Under the circumstances? Under any normal circumstances, he would never have dared suggest doubling to a noble woman, no matter how many merchants he had to push into one bed. But what he meant was, since she would soon be off to the White Tower. In fact, he more than suggested. He had already moved the woman in. And when she protested,
"If you're displeased, I suggest you speak to one of the Aes Sedai," he said in a firm voice.
A firm voice? To her?
"Now, if you'll excuse me, I have many things to take care of. We're very busy right now."
And off he bustled without another word, or even a bow. She could have screamed. She very nearly channeled to give him a clout on the ear.
Hazel Palin was a rug merchant from Murundi with the lilt of Lugard in her voice. Moiraine heard more of it than she wanted from the moment she stepped into the small room that had been hers alone. Her clothes had been moved from the wardrobe to pegs on the wall, her comb and brush displaced from the washstand for Mistress Palin's. The plump, graying woman in fine brown woolens surely would have been diffident with Lady Alice, but not with a Wilder who everybody said was off in the morning to become a novice in the White Tower. She lectured Moiraine on the duties of a novice, all of her information wrong. Some of what she suggested would have killed most of the novices in a week, if not on the first day, and the rest was just impossible. Learn to fly? The woman was mad. She followed Moiraine down to supper and gathered other traders of her acquaintance at the table, every woman of them eager to share what she knew of the White Tower, which was nothing at all. They shared it in great detail, though. If Moiraine truly had been a potential novice, they would have frightened her out of going anywhere near the tower. She thought to escape by retiring early, but Mistress Palin appeared almost as soon as she had her dress off and talked until she dropped off to sleep. It was not an easy night. The bed was narrow, the woman's elbows sharp, and her feet icy despite thick blankets trapping the warmth of the small tiled stove built in beneath the bed. Ignoring cold air was one thing. Icy feet were quite something else. The rainstorm that had threatened all day broke, wind and thunder rattling the shutters for hours. Moiraine doubted she could have slept in any event. Dark friends and the black Aja danced in her head. She saw Tamra being dragged from her sleep, dragged away to somewhere secret, and tortured by women wielding the power. Sometimes the women wore Marian's face, and Lorella's, and Cadswain's, and every sister's she had ever seen. Sometimes Tamra's face became her own. When the door creaked slowly open in the dark hours of morning, Moiraine embraced the source in a flash. Sidar filled her to the point where the sweetness and joy came close to pain. Not as much of the power as she would be able to handle in another year, much less five, yet a hair more would burn the ability out of her now, or kill her. One was as bad as the other, but she wanted to draw more, and not just because the power always made you want more. Cadswain put her head in. Moiraine had forgotten her promise, her threat. The green sister saw the glow, of course, could feel how much she held. "Fool girl," was all the woman said before leaving. Moiraine counted to 100 slowly, then swung her feet out from under the covers. Now was as good a time as any. Mistress Palin heaved onto her side and began to snore. It sounded like canvas ripping. Even so, Moiraine took care to be quiet. Channeling fire, she lit one of the lamps and dressed hurriedly. A riding dress this time, in dark blue silk and embroidered on the neck and sleeves in a golden pattern like Maldine lace. Reluctantly, she decided to abandon her saddlebags along with everything else she had to leave behind. Anyone who saw her moving about might not think too much of it, even this time of the morning, but not if she had saddlebags over her shoulder. All she took was what she could fit into the pockets sewn inside her cloak, her brush and comb and sewing kit, some spare stockings, and a clean shift. There was no room for more. It was enough, with the letter of rights and the remaining gold in her belt pouch. Mistress Palin was still snoring as she closed the door behind her.